Welcome to the Indisposable Podcast, produced by Upstream. I'm your host, Brooking Gatewood.
And I'm your co-host, Matt Prindeville.
Thanks for joining for another episode celebrating solutions to plastic pollution.
Hey, what's up, Solutioneers? Welcome back to the Indisposable Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Prindeville, CEO and Chief Solutioneer at Upstream. And today, I'm very excited to have Clayton Kyle on the show. Clayton's a seasoned executive. He's an investor and a venture capitalist who, up until recently, also served on Upstream's board and closed out his tenure as our board chair last December. Today, he's the chairman of Clink, an innovative bottle redemption business that uses a patented bag drop platform that makes recycling easy while providing key data and measurable financial benefits to retailers, beverage manufacturers, and recyclers. With big brands now signaling support for extended producer responsibility and new deposit return systems, and most recently reuse refill, new opportunities have opened up to get policies passed and the infrastructure built out to transform how we consume products like food, beverages, personal care, and cleaning products. We wanted to bring Clayton on the show because of the potential for innovative companies like Clink's to be service providers in the new reuse economy and to support the build out of extended producer responsibility and deposit return systems for packaging. So welcome to the show, Clayton.
Thank you, Matt.
So, you know, getting into how you got here, I know you've had kind of an interesting journey to finding your way to Clink. Why don't we start back at the beginning? I mean, I know that when we've had beers together over dinner, you've talked about, you know, your journey from the entertainment world into the environmental world. But why don't we start with how you got into this business all the way back at the start of your career?
Well, it's a pretty circuitous route. And when your career has lasted as long as mine has, it does its twists and turns. But the Clink journey began in sort of the 2004-2005 timeframe when I was in Maine. I had recently sold a small private equity investment in a company, was looking for other opportunities, and had run across other individuals who were similarly interested in finding small venture investments in Maine, which frankly has never been on the radar of the big venture capital firms, at least certainly wasn't back in those days in the early 2000s. So we put together a little private equity fund. When I say little, you know, that's like $6-7 million worth of equity that we put together through private investors to look at business opportunities, really focused on doing things in Maine. And our investors were particularly interested in supporting smaller Maine companies. So we cast around and came across this concept that a small group had put together where they wanted to try to automate return centers that were manual operations where they were picking up deposit containers and manually identifying what the deposit amount was, who the container was produced by, all that stuff, and returning the deposit to the person who had dropped it off. So it had been historically a very manual process. And this group of individuals had to come up with an idea to create a machine that redemption centers could use to make it a little faster.
Yep.
We looked at that and thought that's going to be that machine they were devising and the software and all that stuff was going to be too expensive and complicated for most small mom and pop redemption centers, which was the classic model. But we thought that if we took that technology and aggregated it into one or two or three large locations, the cost for the per container transaction would go way down and maybe we had something there. So that was the original idea, that we took this, we bought this concept that had one piece of hardware and some software, and redesigned it to be a larger system and service a much bigger footprint. We are several iterations past that original technology today. and doing hundreds of millions of containers in various locations. So it's really expanded quite a bit.
You know, I've lived in bottle bill states literally almost my entire life. And I can remember going all the way back being a kid and going to redemption centers. And, you know, we also, of course, back then we would look for bottles and cans on the side of the road. And, you know, if we helped out around the house, sometimes our folks would let the boys have the money coming from, the bottles and cans that we would redeem. But I remember it was a very kind of, you know, the situation was you walked in, the redemption center smelled, it was not a super clean place. And it took forever for all the bottles and cans to get counted out. And then you get handed your money, and that was always the payoff. And always for a kid, it was super exciting. And I loved being a part of that economy. You know, it felt right to be returning packaging and knowing that it was going to get recycled. But, you know, it never was a nice experience. And I mean, I remember all the way up until I started using the Clink system that it was the same experience. And there really wasn't a whole lot of innovation. It didn't really matter if you went from Massachusetts to you know, Vermont or to Maine, any of the places. This is not I don't mean to put down folks that are running redemption centers. It's tough business. But there was definitely some room for improvement there. And I think you guys capitalized on that. And, you know, tell me a little bit about how that innovation just came about. You said, you know, you wanted to be able to do something that was not only going to be easier for the consumer, but was also going to benefit business. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the business side of the equation.
Well, it was sort of an interesting time in the early 2000s when there was more and more interest, not as nearly as much as today, in the sort of environmental part of the bottle bill experience. So I think that one of the big breaks we had was that we got a large local retailer, or national retailer really, in Hannaford, interested in supporting this concept, because Hannaford understood that this would bring foot traffic to their stores.
Yeah.
And not only that, but the transaction meant that the consumer was going to, at various times, as you just described, get money back. And that transaction took place in the store.
Right.
So
right.
It created foot traffic and it created money in the pocketbook. So Hannaford liked the idea of obviously supporting a cause that they felt resonated with their customer. But they also liked the idea that it developed both foot traffic and change in the pockets of their customers. So it hit a lot of notes. But one of the things that's evolved, and this sort of speaks to what you were mentioning earlier, is that the interest in the consumer to get their nickel back has always been important in Maine. We have a relatively high percentage of return rate in Maine, and partly because Mainers are frugal and they like to get their nickels. But the attitude has evolved. That nickel has been the same amount for a long, long time,
right,
to get the participation.
Right.
And so the value of that return has actually gone down, mm-hmm, in current dollar terms. But the participation has gone way up. And that is because consumers are interested in doing the right thing.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
The tipping point is, how do you get that interest and the ease of satisfying that desire to a place where it really sings? And so that's where we started with Clink. We saw that opportunity. We brought those together. And then to your point, it taps into a concept of what other things can we encourage people to do with a similar model that has the same kind of potentially monetary as well as emotional impact that the original bottle bill had.
Yeah. So let's talk about it from the consumer angle as well. So, you know, I think, of course, as you just mentioned, you worked with a retailer that really saw the opportunity on the business side of getting foot traffic in the door and having people get their money back literally in the store where they're most likely to spend it. So on the consumer side, you know, I mentioned the experience of kind of the redemption center model. And I also remember that you guys have evolved your model over time. I mean, I've been clinking for a while now. And I remember I used to go into the store at the local Hannaford with my clink bag and I'd drop it off. But now I get to go just drive up in the parking lot. There's a kiosk out in at the edge of the parking lot that I now scan and drop my bag in. But let's also, I think we should back up a little bit and talk about it from the consumer lens, because I don't think we actually explained enough how it works for someone. So maybe let's go into detail. Like, so I decide to set up a Clink account while I'm at the participating Hannaford. What happens from there?
So it's pretty simple. Hannaford sells at our cost, the bags that you will need that are designed for this process. So with the account, you get a box of bags that are used, as I said, and then you get a printout of tags that go onto those bags that uniquely identifies your account. So all you need to do is fill that bag up with returnables and stick one of your unique stickers onto the outside of that bag. And as you mentioned, drop it off. Most of the time it's dropped off now in a container in the parking lot that you can just drive right up to and drop it through the door.
Yep.
So that way we have the information who to return the nickels to. It goes into an electronic account that you can track online. You can let it sit there as long as you would like. And whenever you feel like it, when you're at Hannaford next, you ask to take your money out. They scan your card and you withdraw.
Yeah, it's a very elegant system and it's quick. I think one of the things that I've just gotten in the habit of is, you know, I have in my kitchen, I've got my composting area, I've got my garbage, and I've got my recycling, and then my returnables. And with the returnables, I just put in the Clink bag, put all the beer, wine, and you know, soda bottles in there and cans, and then pick it up when I'm heading to Hannaford and you know, drop it in the kiosk and go about my way. Now, one of the things I haven't done is I don't always check in on my account very often. And sometimes when I do, I'm like, wow, I had no idea that I had so much money in this account. I imagine that happens to a lot of your customers. But you're right. For me, the big benefit is the behavior and knowing that the materials are going to get recycled properly. Now, you and I had a conversation, you know, many years ago. I remember it was either the first or second time that I was touring your facility. And this is probably another good segue for you to explain. Like, I dropped my bag off at the kiosk in the Hannaford parking lot in Rockland. What happens to it next?
So we have a fleet of trucks that come around on a regular basis to those locations, and they simply transfer all the bags into the trucks. The truck goes, depending on where that location was, to one of our processing centers. And it's pretty straightforward. The processing center now has carts full of tagged bags, full of containers. We have several lines where the following happens. The operator picks up one of the bags, breaks it open, and dumps all of the containers into a mechanical spinning tray, which is designed by centrifugal force to singulate all the containers around the rim of that circle. While that's happening, he scans the bag tag that was on that bag and puts the bag into the recycling area. Now the system knows who owns those containers that are sitting in that spinning disc and being singulated onto a belt. So now we've got all the containers lined up in the circumference of this spinning disc, and they then travel onto in single file onto a belt, which has scanning cameras. And the cameras pick up the barcode on each container. And from there, software recognizes, based on the barcode, what the material is that the can is made of or the container is made of. And it separates each of those containers by material into different paths, because aluminum, plastic, and glass all get treated differently, obviously, at the end of the recycling system. So we now have captured not only the material type, we've captured the number of containers, the number of nickels you're owed, and who owes you those nickels. In other words, when you bought that can of soda, you paid a nickel to Pepsi at checkout, and we tell Pepsi that can just came back and they need to return that nickel to us, and we return it to you through that system. So it's actually pretty many technical steps that rely on that barcode being picked up. Now, if for any reason we see a barcode we don't recognize, the system automatically kicks it out, and we manually track that container, look to see if there was a reason why the barcode was misread or scratched or something, or if it is in fact a barcode we don't recognize because it hasn't been put in the system yet, and we track that down. So, you know, if 7up comes out with a new kind of product and introduces it to Maine, and they haven't told us yet about the barcode, we will still find it and we'll track it down and give credit where it's due. So there's a fair amount of technical detail in getting all these nickels collected, but over time the systems get pretty sophisticated and it works pretty well.
I was going to say it's a very sophisticated system. I mean, I've been down to see the recycling facility in South Portland a number of times now. And, you know, as a kid, I'm dating myself now, but as a kid, of course, I grew up watching the Jetsons, and it looks like something out of the Jetsons. You've got all these conveyor belts, and things are dropping out here and they're popping off over here, and it's really quite fascinating. And if you haven't ever been to a recycling facility, it's they're worth checking out because of the sophistication of the technology. And in your end, you're not just like your typical recycling facility that is only looking at the different materials. You're also scanning and being able to identify the cans and bottles that are owned by a particular person. And so that's another layer of sophistication that is unique to the Clink system. And I think something that's really exciting, because there's been a lot of conversations about the need for more account-based recycling. And I'd love to talk a little bit about that, because we don't think of it just as account-based recycling. We think about it as account-based reuse refill, because we know that just as you and I've talked before, that you don't need to just set up these bottles and cans and so on for recycling. You could also be collecting refillable packaging that could, in the same way, get sorted off the line and get shipped to somebody who can wash it and then reuse it and refill it. So I'd love to talk a little bit more just about the evolution of account-based packaging collection, and where you see the potential lying for the future.
We see a lot of potential there. As you briefly mentioned at the intro, we already have glass milk containers that are not part of the bottle bill specifically, that we separately track and return to the producers, because they're high value. They're a couple of dollars worth of deposit for those containers. We aren't overwhelmed with them. There are lots in Maine, but it's not an overwhelming amount, and it fits well with the transactions that we're already doing. They're easy to separate. We know how to handle glass well, and they're high value. So we've already, cracked the code, if you will, to doing product that is not specifically in the bottle bill. And the concept that there is other valuable material that people can return, valuable to the system, or it's made value because they're incented to do it, however we define value. We know that we can make that link between the transaction the consumer needs to make to get it to us and what we need to do to separate it and get it to where it needs to go for its next life. So we've thought pretty carefully about how that evolution will evolve. And it's sort of this tipping point where the incentive for the consumer, the interest for the manufacturer, and the capacity for the intermediary, which is Clink, all of those things come together and the process begins. And I think we're right on the cusp of that.
Yeah, and you guys could be accepting a lot more. I mean, even just thinking about the current material types that you do accept, which is mostly PET, aluminum, and glass. I mean, there's so many other containers in a grocery store or in the convenience store that are non-deposit containers, but they're made from glass or aluminum or plastic. I mean, theoretically, could you enter into arrangements with producers, either through an EPR system or even expanding deposit return to cover more types of containers, that you could just tap into your existing system? Or would you have to make significant arrangements if those packages were made from PET or glass or aluminum?
Well, it, it obviously it gets a little tricky when you get down to the details, because a container of glass that contains something that's hard to clean maybe contaminates other things. There are issues there that you know, are unique to the product we're involved in. But
right,
you know, at a very simplified level, there are thousands of products in glass and aluminum and plastic containers that could easily fit into the system. Yep. Without being complicated, without really contaminating anything, as long as the link between the consumer's incentive and the ease of the transaction for them was as high as it is or similar to what it is in a bottle bill. Yep. I would argue that once you have people doing a transaction in a bottle bill environment, the idea of adding other material is pretty simple, even if the incentive to get a nickel per transaction isn't as high. Because yeah. I think a lot of people are motivated by doing, as I said, doing something they believe is the right thing, and the system is easy enough for them to participate in. And plus, believe that the system is actually doing it the right way, which, by the way, a lot of single sort recycling is not doing the right way, which is another problem confusing the marketplace and moving it to more effective processes.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to dig into that a little bit more as well. You know, so let's talk a little bit more about the uniqueness and the kind of innovation of account-based packaging collection. I'm not going to call it recycling because the benefit there is that it could also be used for more reuse, refill, and refillable packaging. So account-based collection. So, you know, I think that what we're starting to see more of is you've got new platforms emerging, like the Loop platform, for example, that are literally into stores like Hannaford, bringing in cleaning products, personal care products, other types of consumable products in reusable and refillable containers. And then they're setting up a separate collection infrastructure for those refillable containers. I mean, I could very easily see if we're talking about, you know, you guys are already doing dairy, that the Clink system could easily incorporate, you know, more and more types of those types of containers. And theoretically that you could also enter into different business arrangements and get paid to receive those containers, you know, sort them, bale them, and then ship them off to where they might get washed and refilled. And the way that we've been thinking about it as well is that, you know, these washing and refilling hubs are going to be in the industrial parks on the outskirts of major metropolitan areas, just like you guys are. I mean, most of the Clink recycling operations, you're on the outskirts in an industrial park on a major metropolitan area. And so we definitely see that, you know, washing and refilling hubs could be situated nearby kind of collection and sorting hubs like yours, which could then enable, you know, more of the new reuse economy, more refillable packaging done at scale. And so, you know, I wondered, like, just as you guys have been thinking about the evolution, we've now got extended producer responsibility laws that are passing. We've got new deposit laws that are being introduced. We've got a federal deposit return bill being introduced. Like, how do you position yourselves within the ecosystem to start letting the decision makers know at big brands and at retailers that you guys can do a lot more and you're prepared to do a lot more and you're prepared to serve you know, this new circular economy?
Well, as you well know, it's a noisy environment right now. And by it, I mean this whole idea of trying to make it more efficient to get the right kinds of materials returned in the right way so that they are reusable in their ultimate best way.
Yep.
And not downcycled, which is, you know, been the common solution, and it's not a solution, it's just delaying the problem. So I think that there are, you know, there are infrastructure issues, there are economic issues, and part of the challenge here is that there are lots of separate entities looking at trying to find solutions. Not a lot, but there are several entities trying to provide solutions. There are legislative issues affecting, as you just mentioned, the momentum around a national bottle bill. So I think if you step back, this is all good news that there is momentum all looking to solve multiple problems here. part of the challenge is it's getting a little noisy, and it's and the difficulty is that consumers have a short attention span if they don't get it and it doesn't work for them pretty quickly.
Right.
They don't understand how broken it is for they don't see it as broken. They would just like to be part of the solution if it's easy enough. And I'm not demeaning the consumer's attitude. The consumer is, you know, hit with a lot of different information about what's right and what's wrong, and it's very confusing sometimes and on the environmental perspective. So the tipping point here is the consumer's interest, the ease of the system, and finding the value in the system that allows the providers to make money doing it. And all that exists, but it's going to take a little while to get coordinated and you know, sort of best practices instituted.
Yep. I want to explore just another path here before I let you go, which is, you know, what we've been talking about is a return to store model, which works great in rural areas like you know, rural Maine where I live. Most people have cars out here. There is no public transportation. Everybody drives to the grocery store. You know, it's no big deal to throw my bag of returnables in the trunk of the car and drop it off. But I'm just thinking about more in urban areas and city areas, and also people that have become really accustomed to the convenience of curbside recycling. Could there be a way whereby a account-based collection system like a Clink system could interface with curbside recycling?
Well, there's some very simple sort of high-level issues that the curbside concept brings up. The first and most obvious is if there is value in that bag, meaning if anybody who grabs that bag can make $4, then leaving it on the curb, we have found, can be challenging.
Yeah.
People will scavenge that.
Yep.
So that's a problem. It isn't necessarily from the consumer's point of view, if their main objective is to have it recycled, and some intermediary who wasn't invited ends up taking that bag and getting the value for it themselves, but it's recycled, you know, maybe 30% of the people are fine with that.
Yeah.
But if the value is relatively high, like it is with 5-cent deposits, we have found that leaving the bag on the curb leads to vandalism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more urban you get, the more likely that is to be true. So the challenge is, how do you have something that is valuable enough to the person who is packaging it up and putting it on the curb, valuable enough to do that action, but not so valuable that some scavenger could basically steal it?
Yeah.
And somewhere in there's a solution, but we haven't really found it yet. And the people who are physically doing the pickup, meaning the entity that is picking up the other stuff being dropped off outside or being left outside the house, they have to be incented to make sure that they can segregate and keep clean the material that is in that those bags we're talking about. All that's doable, but these are steps that need to be taken and done right.
Yep. You know, one other, just building on that, I mean, thinking about the really urban areas, dense urban areas where people might be living more in apartment complexes, you know, versus single family homes or even multifamily homes. I mean, how do you make that scenario convenient for people that are going to be coming out of like an apartment building or, you know, living in a dense urban area, and they've got their returnables and they want, like you said, they're motivated to do the right thing. They're willing to bear some amount of inconvenience, but there are limits to that. How would a company like Clink be able to serve those types of customers?
Well, this isn't a sweeping solution, but we have seen laundry chutes.
Mm-hmm.
We have seen apartment buildings where people can do trash through chutes or laundry through chutes. Literally, you know, at the end of the hallway, they can drop their trash into a chute. We have in places where they have set it up so you can also drop your Clink bag.
Oh, wow.
You know, so it's not, that's not a universal solution, because that infrastructure doesn't exist everywhere.
Yep.
But again, it's sort of this crossover between motivation and opportunity. And we're finding that people are more motivated all the time than they used to be. So the barrier, the ease with which you have to make this gets less and less the more motivated individuals become. But it's in urban environments, it's a challenge. The fact that there is scavenging if the material is valuable, or there is lack of infrastructure if the material isn't necessarily valuable but needs to be separated and separately handled.
Yep. But what I'm hearing you say is, you know, return to store works really well. And especially, I mean, I can't think of anything more convenient than putting it just outside in front of my house than the model that you guys have set up, because it's so simple, it's so easy. And it just, it goes in with the general shopping practices. So, and that definitely works for rural and suburban areas, ex-urban areas around the country. I think the challenge is in the dense urban areas. And what I hear you saying is that, you know, if there's sufficient quantity, it may be worth a company's like Clink's while to have a driver swing by an apartment complex on a regular basis to pick up, you know, the Clink bags that are being deposited there. Am I hearing you correctly?
Oh, absolutely. And yeah. You know, even in Maine, there are somewhat urban type environments where we go in and pick up an apartment complexes that have a drop off center in the complex. In other words, people can go just sort of like there is at a Hannaford. They can go to a drop off center that the complex is set up, and the material is picked up there. So absolutely, there are these kinds of opportunities. It's not complicated. It's this tipping point of motivation and opportunity.
Just have one more question for you, Clayton. You know, I've been thinking a lot about the importance of glass in this new reuse economy because of, you know, how it is inert, how it can be washed and reused, you know, a number of times. And how, from an aesthetic and presentation standpoint, like a lot of food producers and beverage producers want to use glass. And so, you know, when I think about the Clink system, you know, yes, there's a lot, you know, you guys are stewarding those containers in a way that is, you know, wanting to preserve their value, but there's still, you know, glass is still being banged around in bags and thrown into kiosks and loaded onto trucks. 50, 60 years ago, you put the beer bottles back in the beer crate and then you'd take it back to the store. You know, I'm just curious, like, if we're starting to see more glass come into the picture, especially around reuse refill, how can a system like Clink's accommodate that to ensure that there's, you know, the least amount of breakage possible? I was fascinated to learn that you're already doing this with refillable dairy bottles. You know, what are some of the considerations for, you know, having more refillable glass enter into a system like yours?
Well, it's a little tricky because today, except for the milk containers that you just mentioned, we basically pelletize all the glass.
Yep.
We break it and pelletize it so it can be melted and used as glass and made back into glass again, which is one of the reasons why, you know, it doesn't have to be super clean because it's going to be cooked at 10,000 degrees or whatever and made into glass pellets. So to maintain a glass container to keep it from breaking gets back into the question of value to the consumer and structure of the process. So if consumers are willing, as they've shown they are, to pay $2 deposit on a milk bottle, well, $2 goes a long way to get people's attention to return it in a way that preserves that container so they get their money back.
Yep.
So what we're talking about is a separate system that takes higher value material that has these higher value deposits on them and emphasizes the fact that they need to be returned whole.
Yep.
So if I had a bag full of $2 bottles, and I knew that breaking those bottles was going to cost me $2 a whack, I'd handle it more carefully.
Right.
And the system on the other end obviously would be designed to maintain, you know, to keep them whole. Yeah. So all that's doable. Again, it's if people have the incentive, the system to do it already exists.
Yeah. Well, This has been a fascinating conversation, Clayton, and I'm definitely taking that last little nugget with me as we go around. If the value is there, the consumer has the incentive to handle it appropriately, and so does the service provider. I'm excited about continuing this conversation with you. I know that a lot of this is going to evolve as we get new deposit return systems and extended producer responsibility systems and reuse refill policies in place. And I'm excited to see the evolution of Clink's business as all this happens. So it's been a great pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. Looking forward to our next conversation.
Well, thanks for having me, Matt. And I just want to emphasize what a great job Upstream is doing in so many areas and getting the word out and helping support what's really going to be important to the people, not just in this country, but on this planet. So thanks for all your work.
Well, really appreciate that. Really appreciate that. All right. And that's our show. For those of you that want to get more information about Clink, you can go to www.clink.com. And Clayton, where can folks find out more information from you if they want to connect with you?
I can be reached by email, which is claytonkyle1@gmail.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Clayton.
And that's our show. If you like what you're hearing, help spread the word. Subscribe to the Indisposable Podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Add a review, talk us up. Nobody spreads a message like you. The Indisposable Podcast is brought to you by Upstream, sparking innovative solutions to plastic pollution, envisioning a world without it, and empowering businesses, communities, and individuals to imagine and co-create this future with us. You can find resources mentioned on today's episode, as well as learn more about Upstream's work at www.upstreamsolutions.org. Follow us on social and join the movement. There's a better way than throwaway.